so. I used my hand as a visor to shade the sleep from my eyes and nodded. Absolutely. He's just a high school friend. The lie felt sour in my mouth. I'll see you tomorrow. Brent gave Vicious another curious look. He must have looked like a complete loon to him. After a brief beat, Brent disappeared inside the taxi and it drove away, red lights dancing as they chased the night traffic of New York. The sleet was stabbing in our faces as we stood in front of each other, but I didn't say a word. He looked at me helplessly, a lost puppy, and I wondered how I hadn't seen it earlier. The complete and utter nakedness of his feelings. The pain, the ache, all the things that made Vicious, Vicious. You waited here the whole time? I swallowed a sob, because it really was sad underneath all the anger I had for him. He shrugged, but didn't answer. He still looked a little perplexed, like he himself couldn't believe he'd done what he just did, waiting for me in a winter storm. I don't want to help you with Joe, I said. I didn't, but I still wanted him to get justice. I tried to convince myself that Vicious had other options to explore. His ex-psychiatrist, Eli Cole.
Not what I'm here for. She's inherited every single penny my dad had.
His voice was as detached as always. I barely had time to process this new information before he dropped another bomb.
Don't quit.
I already have. Sent my resignation letter in the mail. Thought it'd be better this way, seeing as Dean is back and everything. I watched as he squeezed his eyes shut, like this was another blow he wasn't expecting. I knew Dean was back in town because he'd left me a post-it note on my door, informing me that my steady dick was out of town, but that I could still go up to the penthouse and ride another rodeo if I was feeling lonely. Disgusting prick.
Why?
Vicious asked. Why? I almost laughed. The real question was why I'd agreed to work for him in the first place. Because you have issues, Vicious. You treat everyone around you like crap. You had sex with me in my ex-boyfriend's bed, and then you take Georgia up to your hotel room the night before your father's funeral. You know, in a nutshell.
I don't give a shit about my father. You know what he let Joe do to me.
So you rushed home for the money? You disappeared without a word to me. I thought you were hurt or sick when you didn't show up on Christmas Eve for dinner and didn't answer my calls.
I was out of it when I got the call about my dad.
He seethed, barely moving his mouth as he took a step closer. Our chests brushed, shivering against one another.
You were right, okay? I do have insomnia, and I sometimes lose a grip on things. Then my phone was dead and I forgot my charger. Happens to people all the time. And Dean's place... Yeah, it was a shitty thing to do, but was it really the end of the world? Did you fucking die?
He crooked one eyebrow. I almost laughed. He looked so dead serious, like I was the one making a big deal out of nothing.
And about Georgia,
he continued.
You and I aren't exclusive. We established that long before I touched you.
My heart sank. Pain filled the space between us like a black hole we were both scared to fall into. You did. And now I'm telling you that I don't do non-exclusive relationships. I'm asking you to accept that, respect that, and leave me alone. You made it perfectly clear that I'm not your girlfriend, and that's fine. But I don't think we should keep in touch. We're bad for each other. Always have been. I took a deep breath. Thinking about my 18-year-old self, alone and scared, staring at the world through wide eyes and erratic heartbeats, with no one to look after me but myself. The bus rides from city to city, the I'm okay letters to my family, the hurt, the shame, the pain, all Vicious's fault. You know, I smiled sadly, ignoring the sleet that threatened to freeze us to the sidewalk. I used to think of you as a villain, but you're not my villain. You're your own villain. To me, you were a lesson, an important, brutal lesson. Nothing more and nothing less. I lied because I wanted him gone, because I wasn't a good person at that particular moment. Visions of him clawing Georgia's dress, the same one she wore 10 years ago, assaulted my imagination. After he touched me, after he marked me. I've already secured myself a job at the gallery. This time, you don't get to make the rules. This time, Vicious, you lose. That night, I did something I hadn't done since the day I moved out of my parents' house. I pulled out the shoebox. Everyone had that shoebox with their little sentimental secrets. Mine was different, because it wasn't full of things I wanted to remember. It was full of things I wanted to forget. Still, I'd carried it everywhere with me, even to New York. I tried to convince myself that I'd taken it with me because I didn't want anyone to find out about it. But the truth was, it was hard to let go of what we were, of what we could have been. In a small and tattered Chuck shoebox lay the reason why I fell in love with Baron Vicious Spencer in high school. It was a tradition at All Saints High to have an anonymous pen pal from the same school and same grade for the whole year. Participation was mandatory, and the rules were simple. No foul language, no dropping hints about who you were, and absolutely no switching pen pals. Principal Followhill, Jamie's mother, thought it would inspire students to be nicer to one another, because you could never be sure that you weren't actually talking to the pen pal you'd established a written friendship with. It was surprising how such an old-school, dated game stuck. People didn't actually mind writing to their pen pals, it appeared. I saw the looks on people's faces when the designated teacher for that day slid envelopes into their lockers, wishing they could pounce on said teacher and ask them who the heck their pen pal was. It was useless, though. Principal Followhill was the only one who knew who was writing to whom. But the students never did. The letters were always printed, not handwritten, and we were supposed to sign with fake names to keep our identities hidden. All the same, I grew attached to my pen pal from the very first letter I received during the first week at my new school. Maybe it was because no one gave me the time of day at All Saints High. Black had decided to start our conversation like this. Is morality relative? Black. It was a philosophical question an 18-year-old wouldn't normally ask. We weren't supposed to share our letters with other students, but I knew for a fact most pen pals talked about school, homework, the mall, parties, music, and just regular stuff. Not this. But it was the beginning of the year, and I was feeling hopeful and pretty damn good about myself. So I answered, "It depends on who's asking." Pink. We were only required to exchange one letter a week, so I was excited to get a letter back in my locker only 2 days later.
Well played, Pink. Technically, you're breaking the rules, since I can tell by your name that you're a girl. Another question coming your way, and this time, try not to get around it like a pussy. When is it okay, if ever, to disobey the law?
Black. I actually giggled for the first time since I'd gotten to Todos Santos. I licked my lips and thought about the question all afternoon before I wrote back a response.
Well, Black, and I fail to see how Pink is any different from Black. Clearly you're breaking the rules too, because I can tell by your name that you're a guy. I'll give you a straight, surprising answer. I think it's okay to disobey the law at times, when it's a necessity, an emergency, or when common sense overrules the law. Like civil disobedience, when Gandhi went down to the sea for salt, or when Rosa Parks took a seat on that bus. I don't think we're above the law, but I don't think we're below it either. I think we need to be level with it and think before we do things. P.S. Calling me a pussy is breaking the no-foul language rule, so technically you're practically an anarchist in the realm of this pen pal world.
Pink. The answer came the same day, and it was an all-time record. Nobody was over-eager to write more often than they had to, but I liked Black. I also liked the anonymity of the project, because I was starting to believe that Black, like everyone else, was treating me like crap daily just because I was the daughter of servants. I could use a friend.
I'm semi-impressed. Maybe we should break more rules by you coming to my house tonight. My mouth is not only good for talking philosophy.
Black. I flushed red and crumpled his letter, throwing it into the trash can next to my bed in my room at home.
Here I thought I was, talking to someone who was actually funny and smart, and all he wanted was to get into my pants. I didn't answer Black, and when I absolutely had to send my weekly letter, I responded with, "No, Pink." Black, too, waited until the very last day before he answered me next time. "Your loss, Black." The next week, I decided to stop playing games and write something lengthy. It was a bad week, the week when my calculus book incident happened. Vicious took over my thoughts, so I tried to quiet him down by thinking of other things. "Do you think we'll ever crack the riddle of aging? Have you ever wondered if maybe we were born too soon? Maybe 100, 200 years from now, they're going to find a cure for death. Then everyone who lives will look back at us and think, well, they were screwed. We're going to live forever. Mwahahaha." "I think I might be a pessimist, Pink," he answered the next morning.
"I think it's more likely that these people will have to deal with the wrecked, polluted world we left them because we did fuck all and partied hard when they weren't even a sperm and an egg yet. But to your question, no, I wouldn't want to live forever. What would be the point in that? Aren't you hungry for something? Don't you have dreams? What weight and significance do your dreams have if they don't have a deadline? If you don't have to chase them today because you can do it tomorrow, in a week, a year, or in 100 years' time? I think you're just realistic, and possibly weird as shit, Black."
I didn't write him the next day because I was getting ready for another important exam, though I was planning to write him that evening. But it was too late. Black wrote another letter.
"I didn't mean it in a bad way. Your weirdness isn't a turnoff, Black."
"I bet that's just a pickup line to try to ask me to come to your place again, Pink." I sighed, hoping this wouldn't mean another dry spell from letters. But Black wrote me after 2 days.
"You only get one chance, sweetheart. I'm not going to ask again. You missed the train. Besides, I have a nagging feeling that I know who you are. And if that's the case, I don't want you anywhere near my bed or inside my house. Can wars ever be just, Black?"
My heart pounded fiercely in my chest for the whole day. I looked around in the hallways, trying to catch someone who might have looked at me funny, but no one did. Everybody acted the same way, meaning they either ignored me or sneered at me. Other than Dean. Dean was hitting on me constantly. I wanted so badly to tell him no, wanted to explain that it was a bad idea, that I had feelings for his friend. But even I knew how pathetic that sounded. Falling in lust with your bully, craving someone who found you disgusting. Either way, I didn't answer Black. I decided I'd give him a curt answer when I absolutely had to and steer the conversation elsewhere like last time. But I couldn't, because another letter came the following day.
"I asked you a question, Amelia. Do you think wars can be just,
Black?" Now I definitely knew who he was, and every time I sat next to him in lit class or saw him down the hallway, I looked the other way, somehow feeling angry with myself for talking to Black so freely. It was like Vicious had an intimate piece of me now that he had access to my unabashed truths, which was, of course, stupid. And as if there was any doubt left, my next letter from Black came to me 2 days after, but it wasn't waiting in my locker. It was sitting on my desk, in my room at the servant's apartment.
"Why do you never fight back? I stole your book. I bully you. I hate you. Fight me, help. Show me what you're made of,
Black." We exchanged blank pages for the remainder of the month. My letters to him were devoid of words, though I sometimes doodled something offensive when I was particularly bored. His letters to me contained nothing at all. I sometimes smelled the pieces of paper he sent me. I sometimes rolled them between my fingers, knowing he'd touched them too. And then I started dating Dean. I felt bad about it the whole time, but I did it anyway. I wasn't using him because I did like him. I didn't love him, but love wasn't something I necessarily thought I should feel at such a young age. It might have been easier to think that Dean didn't love me either. Besides, we were good together. We had fun. But we both wanted to go to out-of-state schools, and it made things lighter and less serious between us. At least I thought so. Shortly after I started dating Dean, Black began writing again.
Can you tell the difference between love and lust, Black?
I humored him, not because I wanted to, but because I relished every chance I had to talk to him. Lust is when you want the person to make you feel good. Love is when you want to make the other person feel good. Pink. The next time I got a letter from him, my hands shook, and they would continue to shake for the next few months as Black crawled into my soul and took a seat in the pit of my heart, making himself comfortable.
And if I want to hurt the person, is that hate, Black?
I answered, no, it's pain. You want to inflict pain on the person who caused you to hurt. I think if you hate someone, you just want them gone. Do you really hate me, Black? It was the bravest question I'd ever asked him. He took the whole week to get back to me with that one.
No, Black.
Do you want to talk about it face to face, Pink? Another week passed before he answered.
No, Black.
We ping-ponged for the remainder of the year, talking about philosophy and art. I was dating Dean, and Vicious was sleeping with everyone else. We never mentioned our real identities again. We never admitted to one another, not in person and not in the letters, that we were who we were. But it was becoming clearer that we were compatible. And every time I saw him walking down the hallway with his lazy smirk and a harem of cheerleaders or his football crew trailing behind him, I smiled a private smile. A smile that said I knew him more than they did. That they might hang out with him every day and attend his stupid parties, but I was the one who really knew the important things about him. Even when he tried to kiss me that night, we didn't discuss Black and Pink. If anything, the next week he wrote to me as if nothing had happened. As if Vicious and Black were completely different people. The one and only time he'd admitted to being Black was on the day I left Todos Santos for good. Our pen pal project had ended weeks ago, but I still found an envelope on top of my suitcase. The handwriting was unfamiliar, but I still knew who it was from. The outside said, "Open when you feel like you might forgive me." I still hadn't opened it. Not even after we had sex, because I knew that wasn't about forgiveness. That was about satisfying my need for him. And now? Now I still couldn't forgive him. But finally, my curiosity had won out over my self-control. I pulled the last letter out of my shoebox, the paper yellow and brittle, and read it.
You were always mine, Black.
Chapter 23. Vicious. I waltzed through the double glass doors of FHH, ignoring the stunned faces of the New York employees who thought they didn't have to deal with my sour ass anymore. My face was relaxed, my posture poised. I was the same old Vicious, regardless of what I was dealing with in my personal life. The office was buzzing with post-holiday phone calls, overlapping chatter, the noise of working printers, and people slurping their lukewarm coffees from their stupid best dad, mom, grandmother mugs. I strode with purpose to Dean's office. I couldn't work inside there right now for the obvious reason. It was occupied by Dean, but I didn't plan to leave New York because there was nowhere else I would rather be. After I saw her at the exhibit, as I sat in the searing hot bathtub and tried to get the feeling back in my numb, icy feet, I'd made up my mind. I wasn't leaving until Amelia LeBlanc came with me, even if that meant she was a package deal with her big-mouthed little sister Rosie. Amelia, my makeup is revenge. Yours is forgiveness. You're better than me. I don't deserve you, but I'm going to take you anyway. But Jamie was right. I was acting like a fucking tool when it came to her, so the least I owed myself was not to let her slip through my fingers because of that this time. Opening the door to Dean's office without knocking, I breezed straight in and planted my ass on the chair directly in front of his desk. He sat there, talking on his phone and deliberately not paying any attention to me. He scribbled something on an FHH notepad as he spoke. "Of course. I'll let Sue know and we'll send someone over as soon as possible. It shouldn't take long to draft something like this." Sliding the notepad across his glass desk, he pointed his finger at what he wrote, offering me a smirk. "You look like shit." I snatched the pen from his hand, grabbed the notepad, and scribbled something, lifting it for him to see, right next to my dead expression. Sue looks like a bad fuck. He chuckled, still engrossed in his phone conversation. Well, actually, I do have a contact person in Los Angeles. He's one of FHH's CEOs. His name is Baron Spencer. Sue will leave his contact details along with our proposition. Sound good? I gave him the notepad and pen, and he scribbled, tearing the paper from the pad and slapping it against my chest. I plucked it from my suit and read. Your stepmom is a bad fuck. We're not switching branches. It was my turn to write. Fine, I'll join you here. Care if I sit on your lap? He looked up at me and I winked. We were back to being rowdy teenagers, before Amelia came to town and shit all over our relationship. Excuse me, Stephen. Sorry to cut you off. I have an important call on the other line, something personal. Can I get back to you in 10 minutes? Thank you. Okay, thanks. You too. Take care. He slammed his phone down on the desk. I noticed there were a few people peeking curiously from the reception area in the direction of his office, an itch to close the automatic blinds, but knew better than to step deeper into his territory. He would have pissed right there in the middle of his office if it were appropriate. Amelia resigned, he hissed out, opening a drawer and throwing her letter of resignation my way. I didn't make a move to pick it up. I know, I said with a shrug. She can do whatever the fuck she wants. I'm not going anywhere without her, and I need more time here. Tell me, Dean leaned in, lacing his fingers together. How would you have reacted if I did the same to you? Told you I drove your high school sweetheart from our town just because I couldn't see her with you, then went 10 years later and fucked her in your office, your bed, your fucking everything. Right in your face. How would you feel about that, Vicious? Because I'm starting to believe that you're a sociopath for not understanding the depth of the betrayal. True, the two of us were never as tight as you are with Jamie and I am with Trent, but we were still, in the grand scheme of things, brothers. It was my turn to lean forward. I'm a bastard, Dean, but you knew. That night at my party, before she came looking for you so you could go on your first date, you knew how I felt about it, but you went and did it anyway. I was angry with you for years, but I get it now. She was worth it. Amelia is a compulsion. You just want her. Consequences be damned. Although, when you dig deep and think about it, you have to admit I was there first. Her heart beat for me, and you saw it. You saw it in class. You saw it in the hallways. The way she looked at me in the cafeteria. You saw it in the way she came to our football games, but only when I played, even though you played every single week while I sat on the bench most of the season. She never showed her face on those blue bleachers until after I made first string. We all knew. Jamie knew, Trent knew, you and I knew. I think the only person who didn't realize it was Amelia herself. You've moved on. You would never settle for her today, and you know it. You like the variety too much. He considered my words, tilting his chin down in acceptance. We can't both be at the same branch. The LA office is too important to be neglected, and having the two of us in the hallways here is going to result in a power struggle we don't want. But Vic, I'm so fucking mad at you, I can't even look at you right now. Not only for what you did when we were 18, but also what you did in my bed, in my house, with her. My jaw clenched, but I didn't dare look away. I stared at him so hard I thought we were both going to pounce on each other again. My left eye was still purple, and his nose was still bruised from our hotel incident. Dean was the first to open his mouth. Make it worth my while to sit around in Los Angeles while you chase Millie's ass and beg her to forgive the assholeness that is you. Name your price. I knew there were sacrifices to be made, and I was willing to make them. It was justifiable. I got it. I'd fucked up, and I needed to atone for my sins. Sell me 10% of your shares. Dean shrugged. And I'll pack a bag and wait it out in L.A. for 6 months. That's $7 million worth, I ground out. Each of us held 25% of the shares. We had equal power. Buying out my shares was buying me out of my power, my influence, my everything. I wanted to laugh in his face, but he looked too serious to fuck with. By the way his hand clenched his phone as he tapped it against his lips, I knew he meant business. Fuck that shit. I mean, really, Dean? I huffed. It's not like I fucked your sister. I actually suspect you did fuck Keeley at some point, but I'm not going to ask you about it for your sake. You asked me to name a price, Vicious, and I did. Take it or leave it. 5%, I shot back. I was so used to negotiating that I thought maybe I could sell him something I could buy back for double or triple the price. 10% for 6 months. And if you try to negotiate one more time, I'm taking this offer off the table and we both know what's going to happen. Yes. Trent and Jamie would fly out to New York to babysit us again. Then Jamie was going to drag my ass back to Los Angeles like I was a kicking and screaming toddler, and I'd lose her. Forever. She was mine. I didn't come this far just to turn around and walk out of this again. Fine, I said finally. 10%. I'll draft the contract tomorrow. No need. I'll ask my lawyer to do it, Dean said. I don't trust your ass with anything anymore. Oh, I want you to keep Sue. You're right. She is a mediocre fuck, and she wants me to meet her parents, even though I told her I never want a date. Ever. In my life. Fine. My nostrils flared, and I closed my eyes. This was a fucking nightmare. But Dean continued, undeterred. I also don't want you in my apartment. You won't be fucking my ex-girlfriend in my bed anymore. You can take the apartment you gave Millie. It's vacant now anyway. I didn't say a word, processing it all. My expression must have been crestfallen because Dean's smile only grew wider by the second. Shit, man. You're gonna do this, huh? For real? He threw a foam ball at me. I didn't blink or reply. God damn it, I was making a deal with this joker. Dean got up from his chair and leaned into my face. How far are you willing to go for this girl, Vic? I ran a hand through my hair, tugging hard at the roots. Well, I think I'm about to find the fuck out. The next couple of days were busy. I signed the contract Dean's lawyer had drafted, not his dad, a sorry bastard fresh out of law school who drafted a contract littered with enough loopholes and ways out for me to play with when the time came, and I moved my shit into Amelia's apartment downstairs. Dean was scheduled to head to Los Angeles at the end of the week. We told his staff that I was staying in order to recruit two more lawyers to our New York branch and that I needed to train them. It was only a half lie. This had been in the works for months now, but I was never set to train them in New York. People bought it, though I didn't know why we needed to explain anything. They fucking worked for us. Jamie lost his shit when he heard I only had 15% left in the company. And Trent laughed and said he didn't feel sorry for me after treating him like an asshole when he confided in me about knocking up that stripper. I gave Amelia 2 days. 2 fucking days before I came for her. Finding out where she lived was no issue. Fiscal Heights Holdings still had to send her a paycheck for her last week of work, and our personnel head had her new address. I decided to personally deliver the check because I was nice like that. Truthfully, I had no fucking clue what I was doing. I knew I was pursuing her, that I'd given up a lot to stay in New York for her, postponing my revenge on Joe and putting my personal goals on the back burner. But I didn't understand any other part about this. I tried not to label what I felt for her. I tried not to read too much into it. As I said, Amelia was an impulse. Currently, all I knew was that I was acting on it, on my instinct, on my need, on something feral and basic. She'd moved to a run-down neighborhood in the Bronx. Her apartment was just above a Chinese joint that smelled of grease and sweat and had bathroom tiles on the walls. All around on her block, I saw old cars with busted windows and windshields. Gray, wet trash lined the gutters, and string-thin, wide-eyed women carried groceries in a hurry to escape whatever danger was waiting for them around the corner. It was one thing to live in a zip code that wasn't exactly desirable because you had cash flow issues, but a completely other thing to live in a neighborhood that looked like it had one of the highest crime rates in the city. What the hell was she thinking? She and Rosie screamed prey. They were small, beautiful, innocent, and alone. I waited outside the door that led upstairs for 2 hours before she came back home. It was boring as fuck, so I spent my time reading emails and making phone calls. I stood out in this neighborhood like a sore thumb, but I didn't give a shit. Amelia approached the building, and when she realized that I was there at her front door, she rolled her eyes and sighed.
Go away, Vicious. You're like a puppy begging for me to adopt you and take you home, only significantly less cute.
She scrunched her nose. I didn't grace that shit with an answer, just pulled out her check from my breast pocket and handed it to her. She plucked it from between my fingers, her eyes skimming over it. There was a brief moment where I thought she was going to throw it back in my face, but then she must have remembered how poor she was.
Thanks, she murmured, slipping the check into her messenger bag.
I don't like you living in this neighborhood. I took a step closer. She crossed her arms as she took me in.
Then it's a good thing it's none of your business.
Since when are you so cold?
Since you barged into my life again and I was stupid enough to let you in, again. And I promised myself there won't be a third time. What do you want, Vicious?
That was a good question. I bit my lower lip and took in her little body and her yellow and red checked coat. I want to fuck you again, I admitted with a groan.
Fuck me or use me so you can avenge your stepmom.
It's not about that. Fuck the money. Fuck my stepmom, I said, realizing it was the truth. I didn't care about all those things. Not when I was about to lose her, if I hadn't already.
I don't believe you.
I'll never ask you to do anything about it ever again. All I ask is for your time so I can explain.
Thanks, but no thanks.
She inserted her key into the lock and was on the stairs inside with the door shut before I had the chance to do my usual move of shoving my foot into the gap. I banged my fist on the painted metal. At least the door looked sturdy. Now that I know when you get back from work every day, I'm gonna wait for you outside the subway and see you home safely. She laughed from the other side, a cold laugh that she'd learned and mastered because of me, because of everything I'd done to her.
If you want to waste your time, be my guest. I'm not going to forgive you, and even if I did, I wouldn't want to be with you.
We'll see about that. I waited for another response, but this time there was only silence. I grinned quietly to myself. The push and pull was back. She could push all she wanted, but she was going to be pulled back to where she belonged, my arms. I was still eyeing the door when a skinny white guy who was a veteran junkie, judging by his rotten teeth and lost eyes, shuffled for the door holding a plastic bag. You live here? I growled. He nodded, confused.
Third floor. Sup, man? You looking to score?
No, douchebag. I'm your motherfucking nightmare. Stay away from the girls on the second floor. Tell your junkie friends and anyone you know in this goddamn shithole the same thing. I shoved $500 bills into his hand. And fuck, why was it muddy? I didn't even want to know. For every day they're safe and left alone here, you'll get another 100. Deal? His eyes widened in disbelief, his jaw falling. I don't think he'd heard a coherent sentence in a while.
Sure, man. Sure.
I turned around and walked away, hoping it was worth it. It had to be. I had a feeling it would be.
Chapter 24 Amelia. True to his word, Vicious waited for me at the subway every day at 8 p.m. sharp. That's when I'd appear from the freezing station and join him on my street. We would walk in silence. At first, he tried talking to me about my day, my new job, my new boss, trying to milk info out of me about my life. I was having none of it. Finally, we settled into a routine where we didn't say a word until I got to my door. Then he'd watch as I fished out my key and opened it. Every day, exactly a second before I closed it behind me, he'd ask the same thing. Hear me out? 10 minutes, that's all I'm asking. I'd say no, and that would be the end of it. After the first couple of weeks, he changed his script from 10 minutes to 5 minutes. I still said no. I probably should have been more insistent about telling him to get lost and stop following me, but the truth was, it really was a bad neighborhood, and I was grateful for him seeing me to my door every night. It surprised me, his determination and dedication to the cause, whatever that cause might be. We'd only spent a couple of days of bliss in bed together, so the fuel to his lust was bound to run out any day now, right? A part of me still suspected it was just another one of his games. Vicious was a terrible loser. He'd proven this over and over again. When he wanted something, he took it, leaving bridges burned and scorched earth battlefields behind him. I could only imagine what he had planned for Josephine now that he'd read the will. I wasn't sure what he wanted from me. Even more, I didn't trust myself not to give it to him again. But it soothed my sore pride that he was there every day, especially after Georgia. Still, not enough to hear him out. A month after we moved out, Dean came by our new apartment. He looked good, if you liked the hotshot, all-American Bradley Cooper look, which I thought I did, but apparently I was more of a brooding, all-consuming jerk Colin Farrell type of girl. It was a Saturday, and I was just getting ready to go to the corner grocery. I swung my door open, and he stood there with his huge smile and wavy Hollywood hair. Sweet Jesus. Dean, I said, clutching the door tighter, remembering the post-it note he'd left me. If you're here to taunt me, don't worry. Vicious beat you to it, and he is pretty persistent.
Millie,
he said in a tisking tone, pushing my door open and walking in like he owned the place. He was wearing a white turtleneck, dark denim, a gray tweed overcoat, and that I'm better than you smirk the hot holes were probably born with. Dean stopped when he spotted Rosie sitting on the couch, reading something on the old iPad her school had provided her. His eyes narrowed at her, and mine narrowed at him. Oh, no way.
Well, hello, Rosie. You grew up to be eye candy.
He winked at her. I gagged.
Well, hello, Dean. You grew up to be an arrogant bastard.
She winked back at him, wiggled her shoulders in a sassy way, and added,
No, wait, you were always an arrogant bastard. My bad.
Why are you here? I demanded, swiveling Dean's shoulders so he faced me. I didn't like it. The electricity in the air when Dean looked at Rosie. It was the same thing I felt when I was standing next to Vicious. I thought a lot about how I'd feel if Dean walked into my life again, especially since I'd started sleeping with Vicious. I thought I'd feel shame, hurt, and regret, maybe even sadness. But with him standing in my living room, all I felt was anger and a little annoyance. He looked at me like we were strangers, not exes. To some extent, we were both. Dean trained his gaze back at me reluctantly, like Rosie was the reason why he'd come here in the first place.
Right. I just wanted to let you know that, for what it's worth, I fully support your relationship with Vic. And I'm not saying that because he kicked me out of New York to stay here and chase you like a puppy and beg me to talk to you.
It sounded more rehearsed than a Broadway show. I cocked an eyebrow at him and folded my arms over my chest.
You don't care?
He shook his head. There was something light about him, not just his body language, but his expression, too. I believed him.
We were kids. He was jealous, and you were...
He licked his lips, considering his next word. He was still my first lover, my first boyfriend, my first sexual partner. Dean's eyes dropped down as he finished softly.
And you were with the wrong guy. I never should have stepped between the two of you, but I did. And I don't regret it for a second. We were a good couple, Millie. But Vicious and you?
Another pause. Rosie listened closely behind us. Her face told me she was pretty sold, too. Dean just had it in him, the ability to sound genuine and believable no matter what he said.
You were obviously meant to be together. Even if I didn't completely believe that before, I do now, because of the sacrifices he made for you. That's a first. And a last. Give him a chance, Millie. He deserves at least that.
I loved the silence that followed Dean's speech. We all processed it, everything that had been said. Without being dramatic, Dean told me that he was okay with what Vicious and I did, with what we were and weren't, with what we could have been or could be if I still wanted to.
You should probably stay for coffee, Rosie said then, still reading on her iPad.
Nah,
he shrugged, jerking me by my shirt into a big suffocating hug. It felt nice. It felt safe. But mostly, it felt platonic.
If I stay, I'll hit on your sister, and that'd be really messed up now, wouldn't it, Millie?
He whispered into my ear. And just like that, the touching moment was gone. I had a blast at my new job. Brent was talented and worldly and knew everything about everything. We talked art every day and got ready to throw another event, an exhibition in which we planned to show 20 contemporary paintings about nature and love. One of those paintings was going to be mine. And it was going to be quite interesting, too. It wasn't a cherry blossom tree like I thought I'd paint, but it was definitely a true definition of the word love. Rosie had started working as a barista again. She was feeling well. We ate pasta a lot, but sometimes bought ground beef and made meatballs. She understood how much the exhibition meant to me, so she let me paint into the late hours of the night while locking herself in our bedroom.
We only had one, and we happily shared it. I opened all the windows, even though it was still cold, and hoped for the best. There were so many questions I wanted to ask Vicious. How come he was still in New York? What happened with his father? Was he poor now? Well, not poor, obviously. More like unrich. And what were his plans for Joe? But I bit my tongue and said nothing every time I poured myself out of the station and saw his tall, broad frame wrapped in a delicious suit and overcoat. He'd nod curtly and join me as I walked. 2.5 months after he started escorting me home, it happened. The inevitable moment I'd expected, but dreaded. He wasn't there to see me home. My face fell and my muscles slacked when I realized he wasn't waiting for me. It wasn't so bitterly cold anymore, though nowhere near warm, so I shook myself out of my coat and walked a little too fast out to the street to inspect. Maybe I'd missed him. Maybe he'd gone around the corner to the Turkish grocery store to get himself a cup of coffee. He liked their bitter, muddy coffee. Every time he came early enough, he treated himself to a cup and drank it while he was waiting for me. He also read the Wall Street Journal and checked the Asian stock exchanges on his phone. It was almost like he made this arrangement about his downtime with himself. I looked around, my eyes gliding over the brick buildings, the throng of people hurrying everywhere, the old brewery staring back at me, and the industrial buildings rising from the dirty, crumbling concrete. He wasn't there. My heart sank. I should have known his little mission had an expiration date. There was only so much a man could take, and especially a man like Vicious, who'd never had to beg for a date before. I'd refused to give him 10 minutes of my time to listen, not even 5. He had every reason to stop coming. I knew all that, but it didn't make me feel any better. I plugged my earbuds back into my ears, shoved my hands into my pockets, and made my way to the apartment, passing by all the junkies sitting on the sidewalk against walls and holding cardboard telling their sob stories. I always fumbled in my pocket and gave them some change, and I always tended to give the change to the people with the dogs. I crossed the street and Jay walked back to my apartment, almost reaching the entrance of my building. When I saw him, he jogged from the direction of the subway, looking a little flushed. Vicious. I bit down my smile and tugged the earbuds out of my ears. When he was about a foot from me, he stopped, straightening his tie with his hand.
Hey,
he said. His hair was a disheveled mess, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. I remembered how it felt in my hands when he went down on me in Dean's office. I cleared my throat and nodded. Are you okay? I asked.
Yeah. I just wanted to let you know that next week, on Thursday, I won't be able to make it. Something came up. I'll call a taxi and make sure it picks you up from work.
No need, I said. You owe me nothing. And besides, I have an exhibition at work that night. I'll probably stay until late anyway. He shot me a weird look, tearing his eyes from my face and focusing on the building behind me, like he was trying to remember something.
Give me 5 minutes of your time,
he asked, as he did every single day, 5 days a week, excluding weekends. Nope. Bye, Vicious. I turned around and slammed the door in his face. Admittedly, it didn't feel good. It felt really bad the first time I did it, and as time passed, it had become worse and worse. I now absolutely hated myself for doing this to him. But still, I did it. Because protecting my heart over his had become my priority. The problem was, I had been right all along. Loving someone was essentially wanting to make them feel good, and not the other way around. No matter what Vicious felt for me, I knew exactly how I felt about him. And I didn't hate him. Not by a long shot. It was almost a week later when I received the call. Afterward, I took an early lunch break, jumped into the subway, and bolted straight into Vicious's office building. The receptionist in the lobby knew me from my brief time as Vic's PA and let me in. When I walked into the reception area of FHH, however, I was met with a new face of a young receptionist who'd replaced Patty. I knew Patty had already retired because I kept in touch with her, mainly by email. So this wasn't news, but I didn't have time for pleasantries. I need to see Mr. Spencer, I knocked on the receptionist's counter with my knuckles, not offering any further explanation. Every hair on my body stood on end, and hot shivers ran down the length of my spine. I was that angry. The receptionist, pretty and bored and disinterested, batted her eyelashes a few times at me.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Do you have an appointment?
I don't need an appointment, I breathed out, flinging my arms in the air. I'm his... What was I to Vicious, exactly? Friend? No. Lover? Ha! Ex-neighbor? But I was more than that. I shook my head, not really feeling like dwelling on the subject right now. He'll want to speak to me. Please just tell him Amelia is here.
I can't do that, I'm afraid.
Her tone was not in sync with my mental and physical state. She looked so jaded and sleepy, and I felt like a kernel of popcorn about to pop at any moment.
He doesn't want any interruptions when he's working.
Look. I leaned over the counter, seriously tempted to grab her by the collar of her white shirt. I know he's a jerk, and you're afraid that he'll be even more of a jerk to you if you disobey his rules. But I'm telling you, if he finds out I was here and you didn't let me in, he'll fire you. Just like that. I snapped my fingers. So please, just tell him I'm here, waiting for him. She stared at me with a peculiar expression before punching in his extension and bringing the phone to her ear.
Sir, I have a woman named Amelia here for you. She says it's important.
She waited a few seconds, muttering a, mm-hmm, punctuated with a nod, before her head snapped up, her gaze meeting mine.
He said he doesn't know any Amelia, but he does know a girl named Help.
Darn you, Vicious. I rolled my eyes and leaned my elbows against the counter. Tell him it's important and that he's a bastard. Her mouth hung open and her light brown eyes stared at me like I'd just tried to recruit her to the SS. I repeated myself calmly. Tell him that. She did. And it almost made me forget how angry I was for one second. A faint smile tickled my lips. A minute later, Vicious pushed his door open and appeared in the hallway in front of his glass wall. It took me less than a second to realize his new receptionist had a serious crush on him. She swallowed hard when her eyes swiped over his body, and then she shot me a hate glare when she saw the look on his face when we locked eyes.
Missed me?
He offered one of his cocky smirks as I strode toward him. Not quite. I gave him a shove back into his office. He didn't put up a fight. If anything, he grinned like an idiot and winked at the receptionist meaningfully while my back was to her as he walked backward. I slammed the door in her face, then pushed him to sit on his office couch and crouched down so that we looked at each other. He was still grinning like I came there for another makeout session. Your stepmom fired my parents because I worked for you, I said evenly. A frown replaced his smile.
What a bitch.
I nodded, feeling hot tears welling in my eyes.
How did she even know?
He asked. That one was easy. I thought about it on the train on my way here. My mom mentioned it to her. Look, Vicious, they have nowhere to go. Your stepmom's their only reference. They've lived and worked on your estate for 10 years. What do I do? I'd fly to them, but the exhibition... I mean, I could. I would. It's just... I shook my head. Vicious considered my words for a few seconds, looking down at his hands before shooting me a resolute glare.
I'll take the next flight to San Diego and sort it out.
My eyes widened. Didn't you say you have something on Thursday? It was already Tuesday afternoon, and no matter what his plans were, it was a long shot to make it in time for whatever it was he'd wanted to do by then. He shrugged.
I'll postpone my plans.
What were they?
Does it matter?
I considered his question for a second. Did I have any right to ask him what he was doing? No, seeing as I kept pushing him away, not even giving him the chance to explain himself to me for 5 minutes. I shook my head. Thank you. Can you keep me posted? He arched an eyebrow, which I imagined meant, what the fuck do you think, and strode to his glass desk. Being back in his office reminded me that not long ago, we were different. For a fraction of a second, we were together, and it had felt divine,
Not nice, not safe, not taken for granted. It was short and beautiful and painfully memorable, like the tree I was obsessed with.
Anything else?
He fell into his executive chair and didn't try begging for any more of my time. He pressed a finger to his intercom.
Sue, book me the earliest flight to San Diego, and get me my turkey and cranberry sandwich. Also, for fuck's sake, tell the girl at reception to stop sending me have a good day cards. We all know my days are shitty because this city is a motherfucking downer.
He hung up the phone and tilted his head back to me.
You're still here. Do you want your PA job back?
I shook my head quickly. I'm just not sure how you can be both nice and compassionate and a terrible asshole all at the same time, I muttered. He smiled.
It's a hard job, but someone's gotta do it.
Chapter 25. Vicious. It was time I came face to face with Joe. I needed to. Not because of closure or to talk about it or some psychological bullshit, but because I needed to deal with what she'd done. She'd tricked my father. She'd sent her brother to kill my mother. And now she'd revealed her true, shitty personality again by firing Amelia's folks. This had to stop. It had to stop a long time ago, but now I didn't have time to stew in my anger for her anymore. I had to act. My plan wasn't sophisticated. It wasn't brilliant. It was actually borderline stupid, but it was the only one I had at this point. I hoped Joe wasn't there when I got to town because it would have made things a lot easier, but I knew that more than likely she was there and waiting for me. The flight to San Diego passed quickly. I had so much shit to catch up on, seeing as I'd slept through the majority of the day 2 days ago, hence my lateness to Amelia's commute home. At least I saw the complete and utter relief on her face when I finally made it, albeit 10 minutes late when she was already at the door. Our private driver, Cliff, was no longer at my disposal, seeing as my father no longer owned the car, so I took a cab to Todos Santos and called Dean on my way there. We were still cold to each other, but being the new majority shareholder of FHH, something neither Jamie nor Trent liked one bit, had made Dean fucking agreeable for a change. He was no longer falsely heartbroken over his ex-girlfriend, and if I didn't know better, I'd think he actually loved the L.A. life. "Where's a good Mexican place to eat in this city?" he muttered when he picked up the phone, then yawned. It was 7 in the morning. Jesus fuck. "Pink Taco. Listen, I need a favor." "Another one?" Dean groaned. I could practically hear him rolling his eyes on the other end of the line, and it grated on my nerves. I could also practically hear another woman in my bed moaning for him to lower his voice. And then another one. "Two." "God damn it, Dean." "Spit it out," he sighed. "I'll be at your place tonight, 10 or later. We'll party all night. You're throwing a big-ass party at my condo, and you must invite a ton of people. I'm talking at least 50. "And why the fuck?" "Dean," I warned. I hated it when he asked questions. He never asked the right ones. "Just do it." "Fine, asswipe." I hung up the phone just as I entered the estate. The codes were the same. Joe hadn't bothered changing them for some reason. She didn't think I'd come back. Naturally. She didn't know I was privy to what they did to my mom. I think she just assumed I hated her because she was competition. Unfortunately for her, it wasn't the truth. My first stop was at Amelia's parents' at the servants' apartment. I knocked on their door and walked right in. They were packing. Her mom, Charlene, shoved their tacky tablecloths and family pictures into a box while her dad swept the floor, like fucking Joe deserved them cleaning their house before they left. "You need to come with me," I told them. I didn't ask them how they were doing because the answer was fucking obvious, and I didn't offer my apology because it wasn't my fault Josephine was a nasty piece of work. Instead, I offered solutions. Fast ones. "I booked you a room at a hotel and rented a space for your stuff in a self-storage warehouse outside of town. Come on, the taxi's waiting." Amelia's mom was the first to react to me. She stopped what she was doing, walked silently to where I stood, and slapped me across the face. Hard. I guess she did what both her daughters tried to at some point, so I had this coming. I cocked my head to the side and watched her. Tears streamed down her face freely. Such a change from Amelia, who always held back. Even though Amelia looked like a young Joe, she looked nothing like either of her parents. Charlene looked tired and worn out.
What have you done to my daughter? Her voice shook. I looked her in the eye. I did to her exactly what she did to me. But I promise you I will take care of her from now on. That is, if she'll let me. It was Amelia's father's turn to join the conversation, and my heart stopped when I watched him walking over to me. I'd never cared what any girl's parents thought about me, ever. But there was something about this guy that made me want to beg him to give me a second chance. His brows were furrowed and his eyes twitched. I never liked you, he said simply. I nodded. Can't blame you. I don't want you near my daughter, Baron. You're not good for her. See, this is where I beg to differ. I strode deeper into their living room and picked up two of the big suitcases. Moving back to the door, I motioned with my head for them to follow me. I'm going to sort out the Joe situation and secure you to another job, but in the meantime, you'll have to respect her wishes and vacate the premises. It was an order they didn't have much choice except to obey. They followed me across the pebbled walkway in the front garden to the taxi waiting outside the gate. I tipped the driver $200 to check them in, because the LeBlanc couple had never checked into a hotel before, which was again a painful reminder of how humble Amelia's upbringing was and how she still didn't give a fuck about my wealth. After I made sure the LeBlancs were on their way to the Vineyard, Toto Santos's best five-star hotel, I strolled into the mansion that used to be mine like I still owned the place. The house was open, meaning Josephine was there. I went straight to the kitchen, and when I didn't find her there, I checked the pool. She was tanning, lying on a sunbed wearing a huge pair of designer shades and a skimpy bikini that screamed, "I'm still young," and lied. I paced quietly in her direction and took a seat next to her. I was still wearing my suit. It was early morning and the sun was not even fully out, not to mention that it was mid-March, but I remembered Joe talking with her society friends about how a natural tan always beats the machines and tanning creams. She'd freeze her ass outside for a glimpse of a sun ray. "You think this is going to defrost your cold heart?" I asked evenly. I guess her eyes were closed because the minute I started speaking, she jumped and almost hit the sunshade behind us. She scooted to a sitting position, yanking the shades from her face and scowling at me. "What are you doing here? I'm calling the police." She could call the police, but really? On her stepson? It wasn't breaking and entering, and I wasn't aggressive in any way. Yet. I leaned back on my sunbed and crossed my legs, staring at the kidney-shaped pool. Joe loved swimming in it. I wondered if she would still be keen on using it if she knew how many teenagers fucked in it during my badass high school parties for 4 years in a row. "I thought you said you wanted to do dinners and wine more often," I said, my tone still calm. Water mattresses floated on the surface of the massive pool like weightless ballerinas, different colors, shapes, and sizes, and it all reminded me of a Bret Easton Ellis book, The Rich Assholes, The Bitchy Stepmom. It was all so fucked up to the core. Not that I was making excuses, but I really did have a minuscule chance at turning out differently than I had. "You didn't come here to spend time with me, and no matter what you have to ask, the answer is no. I don't want them on my property anymore. They're too old for the job anyway." Josephine lifted a glass of ice water and brought the straw to her lips, her movements ladylike and gentle. It was funny hearing this from her. Amelia's parents were the exact same age as Joe. The only difference was the LeBlancs actually worked for a living. They weren't the useless ones. She was. "That's fine. Charlene is going to cook for me in L.A., and Paul needed to retire 2 years ago. I still needed to find a place for them to live, but otherwise I doubted Dean would have a problem. I actually came here to let you in on a secret." I offered her a smile. She stopped sucking on her straw and arched an eyebrow. "Oh? I know what you and Daryl did. I know what my dad agreed to do. Know how my mother died. I know everything." It was beautiful to see her face whitening and her teeth chattering when the weather and my cold words finally caught up with her body. The glass shattered on the tiles, tiny ice cubes flying everywhere. She opened her mouth, no doubt about to deny the accusation. "Please, Josephine, no more bullshit. The only reason I spared you from justice all this time was because I didn't deserve to get dragged through all this shit along with you. Besides, the plan was always to make sure Josephine would be left with nothing to live for, too. And it almost happened. No husband, no brother, no family, no nothing. Except money."
I was weighing my options in New York, trying to figure out what I wanted to do about the whole situation. Well, I think I finally made up my mind. My voice was so light, but her expression darkened. Everything was strained and wrinkled. She stared at me in complete horror and shock, clutching the tough canvas of the sunbed.
Baron,
her Botoxed lips quivered.
I don't know what makes you think I had anything to do with your mother's death.
Don't lie to me. I blinked once, watching her intently, then shook my head. I heard your conversation with my dad. Heard the little heart-to-heart you had with him. You're pretty convincing, aren't you? Well, you've never fooled me. It was a matter of when to strike, not if.
You misunderstood. I promise you I will rehire the LeBlancs, and you and I should talk about the will. It wasn't fair that your father left everything to me. We can reach a financial settlement.
I tuned her out. She thought it was about the money. How sad was her life? I leaned forward, taking her face in my hands. Gentle. Her breath hitched. Her eyes widened. I was close to her, leaning into her, our knees brushing together. Bile bubbled up in my throat when I smiled at her serenely, sickly, acting like the psychopath she always thought I was. Maybe I was a psychopath. Maybe she was the person who made me one. Joe, I asked, my voice soft, do yourself a favor. Leave this house tonight. I would also advise against sharing this conversation with anyone. You were brave, Joe. So brave to tell my father that Marie was better off dead than alive in her condition. I'd like to see how brave you are if I go to the police. It's true, you might even still get away with having her murdered. But are you willing to take that chance? Now, get back to your precious tan. I patted her cheek, getting up from my seat. Who knows? It just might be your last. Ever since I was a kid, I'd had dreams, vivid dreams, about burning down my father's mansion. I just knew it had to be done. I knew it would soothe the pain, make it go away. Not all of it, but enough for me to live. After I grew up, I even believed that it was the root of my sleeping problems. I just wanted the place to cease to exist, along with my memories of Daryl hitting me, Joe and Dad's conversation, and everything else. But the Spencer Mansion sprawled over 12,000 square feet. It was huge and made of bricks, not exactly the easiest thing to set on fire. Still, you never know until you tried, right? The servants' apartment was only about 100 feet from the main house, not too far away. And while Joe came in and out of the main kitchen several times a day, she'd never even knocked on the LeBlanc's door once. So after I said goodbye to a shocked Joe, I went back there. I walked into Amelia's room, nonchalant as ever. I hummed Kravinsky's Night Call because it finally dawned on me, albeit out of nowhere, that Amelia liked the song because it was about me. I collected everything I thought she'd miss. Framed pictures, mementos from high school, her favorite boots. Tucking everything that wasn't already packed by her parents and shoving it into a box. I spent the next 3 hours carrying all of the LeBlanc's boxes to an SUV in the garage and making 3 trips to the storage warehouse outside of town. Amelia's box, though, I kept for myself. All that time, I saw Joe through the vast French doors of the mansion's kitchen, pacing, tossing back glass after glass of wine, and losing her shit. Then, when I was finally done, I turned on the gas burners of the stove in the pool house, all 4 of them, and left. I wouldn't do the burning down myself. I needed an alibi. But it was going to happen. Finally. If Joe decided to stay in the house and burn down with it, that was her problem, not mine. I'd warned her. Now I had one more mission before I went back to New York. Win the LeBlanc couple over.
Chapter 26. Amelia. Have you seen the news? Rosie flopped on our small sofa beside me. The couch came with the place. It was small, but it was fun to sit on an actual seat when watching TV. Rosie clicked on buttons until she reached a news channel. A mansion we knew all too well was on fire, the roof collapsing into the dancing flames. I stared at it for a long time, knowing exactly what it meant. Vicious. When we were seniors, he'd set fire to La Belle, the yacht that was also a restaurant that belonged to another football player who'd become an enemy of the 4 hot holes.
Vicious liked fire. Maybe because he was so cold, he liked the warmth twirling in his palm. It had his signature all over it. I grabbed my phone from the coffee table and jumped to my feet, dialing his number. I wanted to make sure my parents were okay, that he was okay. He answered on the fourth ring. I stopped whatever it was I was going to say because I heard he was somewhere noisy. A party? A restaurant? I heard women giggling and men shouting. My heart sank to my stomach. Hey, I croaked. Is everyone all right? I saw there was a huge fire in your old neighborhood. I kept it vague because I knew there was no way he was going to tell me the whole story over the phone, or maybe even ever. Tucking a lock of my lavender hair behind my ear, I clasped one hand behind my neck and paced the apartment.
Your parents are at the vineyard.
He was curt, as always, even when he was chasing me every day. I made a memo to thank him for the taxi that had waited for me today when he wasn't able to walk me home.
I'm taking them to LA tomorrow. I need someone to be in charge of the catering at the Los Angeles branch, and your mom's perfect for the job.
I closed my eyes, breathing hard. The last thing I wanted was his charity, but my parents weren't proud people. They just wanted to work and earn their way. I pinched my nose with my fingers, hating that I needed his help and was going to accept it, even after everything we'd been through. Thanks, I said. Well, I'll let you go back to your party.
Bye,
he said, as if nothing had happened, as if he didn't save my butt again. Wait, I hurried out before he hung up. The line was still there, but he didn't say anything. I rubbed a hand against my thighs. When will you be back in New York?
Can you just admit you miss me? It's not that fucking hard.
I heard the smile in his voice. I cringed. I did. I missed him. I hated that he wasn't here today. I'm willing to give you your 5 minutes. I dodged his accusation.
10,
he argued, even after all this time. 8, I retorted.